It's a Wednesday night on March 3. Human rights lawyer Angelo Carlo A.K. Guillen leaves his office in Iloilo City after 8 p.m. He goes to the parking area, and from the corner of his eye, he sees two men walking towards him, one holding something in his hand.
I ran as fast as I could towards a well-lit area, screaming for help the whole time. I lost my balance, fell to the ground, and they caught up with me.
The weapon is a screwdriver. Their target, his head.
They managed to hit me several times in the head, the neck, and the shoulder.
Attorney AK plays dead, wishing his attackers would leave.
There was a point when I closed my eyes because of the pain, and I could only feel the blows, and I could feel blood was trickling down the side of my head and my neck. I wasn't sure how much blood I was losing, but I knew it was a lot. And I was just waiting to pass out.
He survives to tell his story. Other lawyers are not as lucky. In the last 5 years under President Rodrigo Duterte, dead lawyers add up to a staggering number, 61. This is a very high number for one president, compared to the 90 lawyers killed in 44 years under 6 presidents before him combined.
I refuse to accept that it should be an inherent part of lawyering.
Hello, I am Lian Buan, and you are listening to the Law of Duterte Land podcast, where we discuss controversial policies of the executive, gaps in the law, and court decisions that shake long-standing principles in the legal profession. In this episode, we will talk to Attorney A.K. Guillen of the National Union of People's Lawyers. He had just recovered from a near-fatal stabbing on his head, and up to now, he's still securing his information and locations, as he continues to handle the case of a Tumandok tribe accused of being communist rebels. It's still a part of a red-tagging design against community organizers, activists, and lawyers like him. Attorney AK believes this case is the reason for the attempt on his life. His attack is part of the report sent to the Supreme Court, which made an unprecedented move of calling for nationwide information gathering on threats against lawyers. We talked to him one afternoon to ask him what it's like to be a lawyer under threat. Attorney AK, can you tell us about yourself, how you started with lawyering, and how did you start with public interest lawyering?
Well, I became a member of the bar in 2014. Afterwards, I joined a private law firm in Iloilo City, and I've been engaged in the practice of law since then, mostly it's litigation work in civil cases and occasionally in criminal cases. More particularly, for NUPL work, I joined the organization back when I was in law school. I attended conferences and activities where the more senior lawyers from NUPL taught us how to investigate and document incidents of rights violations. So that's how it really started. That's how I first got the idea of public interest lawyering, or more particularly, human rights lawyering. But there was no single occasion when I decided that I was going to focus on human rights. It was more of a gradual process. It was happening over time. I was taking on more work. And eventually, I became resolved that it was an area that needed more volunteers. So after I passed the bar, I took on work for NUPL, beginning with the drafting of pleadings and afterwards appearing in court, representing activists and victims of human rights violations. But the work I enjoyed most were the human rights mission. We would go to far-flung barangays in the rural areas of Panay and teach people there about their rights under Philippine law and under international law. And these are also the communities that are often suffering from human rights abuses committed by soldiers and police officers. So we try to document these violations.
Attorney AK, so all your career you've been in lawyering in the Visayas?
Yes, I have on occasion handled a few cases that take me to Manila, a few times in Cebu, but predominantly it's litigation work in the Visayas, in Panay.
Do you remember the very first human rights case you've handled?
In terms of actual cases, yes, I was one of a member of the QR team, the quick reaction team that responded activists who were arrested during a rally that was during the administration of President Noynoy Aquino. Mm-hmm. They were arrested and we had to secure their release. So that was the very first incident that I responded to.
Where was this, attorney?
In Iloilo City. Yeah. And we spent the night securing the release. And then after that, I entered my appearance for the first time in a case representing activists. And fortunately, the cases were eventually dropped and the clients were acquitted.
Do you remember what they were protesting at the time?
They were protesting militarization and anti-people policies under the Aquino administration, because at the time it was a protest carried out during the Independence Day celebration here in Panay. And as I recall, President Aquino was there. In fact, there were also members of Makabayan from Manila who came in to join the protest. But some of the activists were arrested during the dispersal and they were charged with a violation of BP 880 and other criminal cases. Eventually, the charges were also dismissed.
So in the order of the Supreme Court to make lawyers report to them incidents of attacks, the NUPL filed a compliance. It was a matrix. And one of the things that got my attention is your name, Attorney AK. Parang ilang beses kong nabasa ang pangalan mo dun sa matrix ng mga attacks. Red tagging has been happening to you for many years. Do you remember the first time you were red tagged?
Yes, the first incident where I was personally red tagged was back in December 2018. I was among dozens of lawyers, paralegals, and activists whose images were shown in posters alleging that we were part of the CCP and PNDF. This was just after we had joined a fact-finding mission in Negros to document the Sagay massacre. Mm. And after that, Attorney Ben Ramos was killed. Attorney Ramos was also red-tagged at the time. Mm. He was Secretary General of Negros. So we immediately condemned the red-tagging that took place that time in 2018. And unfortunately, it happened again in March 2019 and again last year in 2020.
Attorney AK, how is that experience like when Attorney Ben Ramos died? Because when he died, the reactions I got was from lawyers from Manila, the likes of Attorney Edra. But for you who so near, yung proximity nyo sa Negros ay ang lapit-lapit and malayo kayo sa Manila where the spotlight is. How did that feel? Did you feel like a real danger?
Yes, because I was in Bacolod at that time, the night that he was killed actually. We met Attorney Ben on the last day of the fact-finding mission in Sagay, and we discussed the findings with him. We discussed how it was best to handle the case. And after that, I was returning to Negros, particularly to Sagay, to secure records for that case. And I was supposed to go home to Iloilo, but I was not able to make the last trip. So I spent the night in Bacolod. As I recall, that was November 6th. At around 10 p.m., someone called me and told me that Attorney Ben had been shot and killed. So I asked if we should go to secure his body or secure the release of his body. But we were advised to stay put because of the security situation. And it was very difficult because Attorney Ben was well known among lawyers in Panay, and that really struck a nerve for all of us here. Nonetheless, you know, we continued handling cases in Negros, and hopefully the experience has not really dampened our spirit. Mm. It may have an impact in terms of fear and reticence, but in terms of result, I think it gave us even more reason to continue with our work.
Okay, could you describe to us the reality of being red-tagged and one of those identified who represent, you know, activists and other red tag groups? What kind of cloud of fear do you operate under?
For me, it's very disconcerting, to say the least, because people we know who have been red tagged later became victims of arrests and trumped up charges. apart from Attorney Ben Ramos, one of our colleagues here, Jory Porquilla, mm-hmm. from Bayan Muna, mm-hmm. was killed last year. And I've known him since I was very young. Mm-hmm. Lara Alvarez from Karapatan Negros, I worked with her on several human rights cases we're handling in Bacolod City. And other paralegals who were with us throughout the fact-finding missions have also been arrested. It's very upsetting for all of us because you never know when an attack was going to take place or what form it would take. But it's actually, apart from the fear, it also triggers a lot of anger. Mm. And we also use that to drive ourselves to become even more resistant and to take on more work. So apart from the fear, there's also that effect of pushing you to do more, not only for NUPL, but for human rights advocacy in general.
Do you experience surveillance of receiving threatening text messages or people dropping in at your house or your place of work?
Yes, before the attack on March 30, there have been previous incidents, particularly being followed from my home to the courthouse and then to my office. The NUPL office in Iloilo City was also being monitored. And in fact, on the day of the attack, it was being monitored the entire afternoon. There have also been incidents of people just walking into the NUPL office and just to look around and then immediately leaving afterwards. Mm. These incidents, as well as the red tagging, have forced me to transfer to an apartment. Less than a month prior to the attack, there was also another incident where individuals were monitoring that apartment I had moved into. Less than a week before the attack, one of our potential witnesses in the Tumanto case had been murdered. So yes, there were a lot of troubling signs, mm-hmm. but I did not expect them to move so quickly in my mm-hmm. case.
There was this webinar on lawyer killings, and I remember Attorney Ted Te of Lag saying that the situation has worsened, that the anxiety is when he's driving and he stops at a traffic light and there's a motorcycle in his window. He often thinks, is this it? Is this my last day? Am I gonna be killed? Does that happen for you when you go to work or you travel from one place to another?
Yes, not just to me, to a lot of my colleagues in NUPL Panay, because some of them have vehicles and they have told me stories about how when they pull over for whatever reason and a motorcycle drives by, it always fills them with a sense of dread. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of our members, Attorney Chris Hereza, was ambushed a while back, and that happened as she was traveling. And here in Panay, you attend cases not only in Iloilo City, but in a lot of courthouses mm. in different municipalities that are in park-lung areas. Mm. It's very dangerous. You need to leave early in the morning, and sometimes you have to travel late in the afternoon or in the evening. It's very distressing because during that period that you're on the road, whether it's in a private vehicle or in a bus or a van or a jeepney, it's you always have that feeling of dread mm-hmm. that at any time something could happen, and it speaks volumes about mm-hmm. the situation that lawyers have to face on a daily basis here in the Philippines.
Of course, you said, attorney, this will not make you stop, and in fact, it just pushes you to do more, and you're actually angry that it pushes you to do more. But what kind of mental preparation or processing do you do that any moment something could happen to you or an attack could be worse?
Well, to be honest, I try not to think about it. These thoughts, they creep up at night mm-hmm. when you have nothing to do or when you're not working, so I adapt by trying to keep myself busy, trying to take on as much work as possible. Even after the March 3 incident, when I was in the hospital, I tried my best to work on readings and to write because that was one way to cope with the stress.
You were writing readings in the hospital, attorney.
Yeah, because there were still a lot of cases being handled, both for MCL and in my private capacity. So we do that to keep our minds off the fear and to placate ourselves and just adjust to the situation. But overall, the fear, the stress can be handled best by having colleagues, by having companions who understand the situation and who can, you know, express their own feelings about it and relay their own experiences. Mm. Because, you know, we learn from them and we're also finding sources of comfort in the colleagues that we have in the profession and in the human rights organizations as well.
We'll be right back. Here's a glimpse of other Rappler podcasts.
I mean, a lot of people, I mean, not much for a lot, but I know that there are some people who would happily use I'm polyamorous label to basically justify anything, mm-hmm. to justify sleeping around, to justify not committing, but that flies in the face naman of how we see it.
It's my choice not to be a mother, but I'm not, it's not
dissing on mothers,
on motherhood, on
it's
parenthood.
Like a purely person-to-person basis.
I'm Marguerite Leon, host of Rappler's I've Got an Opinion, where I speak to ordinary people who have a lot to say about extraordinary issues. Listen in every other Wednesday at 8 p.m. on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
Next time, huwag ninyo akong pariginigin ng revolution. Naku, Diyos ko. Yan ang mas delikado sa COVID. Kaya kung mag-revolution kayo, you will give me the free ticket to stage a counter-revolution. How I wish you would do it.
Don't understand what President Rodrigo Duterte is saying? Want to know the story behind his words? Listen to Seat of Power, Rappler's political podcast about the Duterte presidency, hosted by me, P. Renada, Rappler's Malacanang beat reporter.
Welcome back. I am Lian Buan, and you're listening to the Law of Duterte Land podcast. We were talking to attorney A.K. Gillian, who survived a stabbing in March, part of a surge of attacks against lawyers under the Duterte administration.
Could you tell us the night that you were attacked? What did you do that day and then the moments leading up to the night of the attack?
I usually work at the office until around 8 or 9 p.m. Mm. That night, I was returning to the apartment. And
grabe, ang late mo pala talagang matapos magtrabaho.
That's true not only for me, but for a lot of lawyers. That's early compared to many more lawyers, both here and in Manila. But as I was going home, I usually check if people are following me. Unfortunately, I did not notice that the assailants were already waiting for me at the parking area. So as I was taking out my bag, I saw two men walking towards me. I saw that one of them was holding something in his hand. Mm. I knew immediately that something was going down, and when he raised his hand, I ran as fast as I could towards a well-lit area. Mm. I was screaming for help the whole time. Mm. I lost my balance, fell to the ground, and they caught up with me. So all I could do was to raise my arms, move my head, try to evade the blows, but they managed to hit me several times in the head, the neck, and the shoulders. Mm. And the weapon, I found out later that it was a screwdriver. Mm. The weapon was left embedded on the left side of my head. I pretended to be dead. The assailants escaped on board two motorcycles driven by two other men. So there were four of them in all. And I did not open my eyes until I was sure that they were gone. Mm. And the people from the barangay, they had heard me shouting. So they arrived on the scene soon after and they called for an ambulance. And I was brought to the hospital. I underwent surgery to have the weapon removed from my head. And fortunately, the assailants had struck a hard bone on the side of my head, and my brain was not damaged. So it was by sheer luck, really, that I managed to survive that attack.
Attorney, you were conscious the whole time?
Yes. There was a point when I closed my eyes because of the pain. Mm. And I could only feel the blows, and I could feel blood was trickling down the side of my head and my neck. I wasn't sure how much blood I was losing, but I knew it was a lot. And I was just waiting to pass out. Fortunately, I did not. Mm. And I could hear, when I heard voices coming from bystanders, people in the barangay, and I figured out that the assailants were already gone. That was the time that I opened my eyes and I gave them as much information as I could give. I was conscious the whole time.
Your attackers were masked, I presume?
Yes, both of them were masked. And I could only recall that they wore dark clothes, but I could not give additional details apart from that.
Yeah. The police said it was initially said it was a case of attempted robbery. You said a thing about that in a NUPL event, I think.
Yes, because they did not even try to take my bag until after they had already stabbed me several times in the head, in the neck, and in the shoulder. And they did not even take my phone, my wallet, my watch. It appeared to me quite clearly that taking the bag was a mere afterthought after I had already been attacked. So, and there were four of them on two getaway vehicles. So, I really doubt that it was a petty crime or robbery.
So, your belongings were not taken away from you?
My valuables were not taken away except for my laptop and some case holders. Those were the things that were taken.
They took case folders, as in literal na naka-folder po ng mga papel.
Yeah, case folders that were in my bag.
Do you suspect that the attack is like really related to your job as a lawyer?
Definitely. I would have to consider the context because just a few days before, as I mentioned earlier, one of the witnesses in our human rights case had been murdered. And we had been subjected to several incidents of red tagging. And some of our paralegals had been attacked. As I mentioned earlier, Sara Alvarez from Negros had been killed. There were also other incidents of EJ case in Panay. And, this is not the first time that a lawyer has been attacked. And a lot of legal practitioners have been killed for matters that is related to the cases we are handling. And NUPL is is no exception to that. In fact, I can say that it's quite dangerous to be handling human rights cases in the Philippines, precisely because you're up against the establishment, the military, the police, and high-ranking government officials.
The witness you were saying earlier, it was a witness to the cases of the Tumandok tribe. Is that correct, Attorney?
Yes, that was Barangay Captain Julie Katamin. He was killed, as I recall, February 28th. This was just after we had spoken to our clients, discussed possible case tragedy, etc. And this was also after Julie Katamin had been very vocal about denying the charges levied against the Tumandok who are residents of this barangay. Mm.
To the listeners who might not know what a Tumandok tribe is, can you tell us generally what they are, what they do, or what their livelihood is?
Yes, the Tumandok is an indigenous community in Panay, and they've been fighting for their rights to their ancestral land for a very long time. They have also been very vocal in their opposition to the deployment of government soldiers and the militarization of their localities. Various human rights groups have visited their areas, including myself. We have conducted human rights seminars. We try to teach them as much as possible about their rights under domestic and international law. And we try to document human rights violations taking place there. And many believe that the attack against their communities on December 30 of last year is the result of their willingness to engage in the struggle to fight for their ancestral land and to oppose government projects that have threatened to dislocate them.
Tell us about, with the only the information you can disclose, the arrest in December 30 last year. Is it the same template of executing search warrants and then finding allegedly firearms and explosives?
Yes, it's not the first instance where there were a large number of casualties involved in the service of these warrants. NUPL was also part of a fact-finding mission. We went to Negros Oriental in 2019 to document the operation. It was also a SEMPO operation that led to the killing of 14 farmers and the arrest of dozens more. And also on the same charges that they had in their possession firearms and explosives. There are similar cases in Negros after the in relation to the raids of various officers of the different human rights organizations and progressive organizations. And there have also been cases here in Panay, apart from the December 30 raid in the Tumando community, members of progressive organizations being arrested on the strength of search warrants with allegedly with firearms and explosives being found in their homes. So it really follows a strikingly familiar pattern, and we hope that these cases can be dismissed, that the Tumandok who were arrested that day, many of whom are actually quite old, they can be released and returned home to their families.
It sounds a lot like the Bloody Sunday in Calabarzon, yung service of search warrants, that some were killed and some were arrested.
Yes, that happened, as I recall, March 9. That's why NUTL has been very vocal, along with other lawyers groups as well. They've been very vocal about asking the Supreme Court to review protocols and the rules regarding the issuance of search warrants, because it is very clear that the process is being weaponized. The issuance of the search warrants are being used merely as a pretext to conduct raids, to enter the homes, to justify the use of lethal force against the persons residing there. And I hope that the Supreme Court would take notice. I believe they already have, and I really hope that the necessary amendments can be made to the rules so that incidents like these can be addressed.
So the cases you're handling for the Tumandok, is it for the people who were arrested and charged, or is it for the people who died, or were murder complaints actually pursued for the people, for the Tumandoks who died that day?
NUTL is representing only some of the Tumandok who had been arrested. Other lawyers have also volunteered and been engaged to represent the other members of the Tumandok, and this was mainly through the efforts of the Catholic Church through its Social Action Center. Fortunately, many lawyers took up the call to help the victim.
Attorney AK, so what has the past couple of months been like since March when you were attacked? Have you been more fearful?
Difficult. Definitely, it's not a feeling that, considering that they already made the attempt, they're not going to bother me anymore. No. There's always that feeling that they might do it again. They can do it again. They have the capacity to do so. But in general, it's very difficult because all events would bear out. Human rights advocacy here in the Philippines is very dangerous work, considering that we have a government that cares little about human rights. And the police and the military responsible for all sorts of rights violations. So the past couple of months have been difficult, but on top of the fear that one experiences after such an event, you're driven more by anger, especially knowing that these human rights violations are still taking place, and there are no signs that they will cease anytime soon. So there's also that feeling that you should be able to get back on the field and do as much work as possible to try and help the victim.
Do you accept the statement that danger is inherent to lawyering?
Well, it shouldn't be. By no means should it be inherent to lawyering. Just because it's a reality here in the Philippines does not mean that it's right or that we should just throw up our hands and accept it. Nobody, not lawyers, activists, journalists, not the critics of the government or civilians in general, should ever have to put up with a life that is filled with that kind of danger. If the administration and power can't ensure people's safety or work to improve their lives, then what's the point of keeping it? So, no, I refuse to accept that it should be an inherent part of lawyering.
What's the level of hope do you have in the Supreme Court's review of these attacks? I think they've finished their information gathering period and now presumably in the process of reviewing all the reports that have been submitted.
Well, I'm hopeful about two things. First, that it will lead to amendments in the rules that would help prevent these incidents from taking place again, or at least minimize the dangers. and amendments that would for better investigation into such incidents. Second, I'm also hopeful that the information we provide the Supreme Court could lead to a deeper, more credible investigation into the incidents that have already taken place. So, yes, I'm very hopeful about it. I'm glad that the Supreme Court has taken action, but I'm still wary about the situation in the Philippines. I'm still fearful for all human rights workers, especially my colleagues in NUPL and Karapatan. But there's always reason to be hopeful about being able to contribute and helping improve the human rights situation here.
Before I ask my last question, how can you find the basis to say there's reason to hope when you've already been stabbed in the head several times by a screwdriver and you have to live with this kind of fear every day?
Well, I'm surrounded by people who have faced greater challenges and have encountered even graver dangers than I did, because many members of NUPL, many members of Karapatan and other human rights organizations have themselves been victims of rights abuses committed under previous administrations. And you still see them doing their work every day. You still see them standing beside you. So it's a source of comfort, a source of hope. And really, there's nothing more you could ask in terms of taking on HR advocacy, because they're surrounded by people from whom you can draw strength and from whose experiences could really learn.
Last question, Attorney AK. I'm not going to ask you if you have considered stopping lawyering, because I don't think you would, but have you considered just moving to Metro Manila or any place safer than where you are right now?
No, not really. We go where the job takes us. And for the past few years, there have been so many human rights cases in Panay and Negros. But that doesn't mean that the danger is any less real for our colleagues in Manila or for other human rights advocates in other regions. They are faced with just as much danger of being monitored, arrested, and killed. Many of them have been threatened as well. And there have been attempts on their lives. There have been threats to their safety. Activists and human rights workers are being persecuted across the country, and we can take actions to minimize the risk, but I don't believe it should ever come at the expense of the people that we serve. And so long as there are human rights violations rampantly taking place in the region, then that's where we should be.
That was Attorney A.K. Gillian. I am Lian Buan. Thank you for listening. Follow us on our social media accounts for more news, videos, and podcasts. Listen to Rappler's podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and wherever it is you get your podcasts.